you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Today is Friday, April 3rd, 2009. Thanks again for tuning in to 2A Radio. Again, anybody can reach me on my email, bill@2aradio.com. That's the way to get a hold of me. I want to start off today about a little tidbit regarding training. We hit this a couple days ago on Wednesday's show, I believe it was, where we talked about the Second Amendment right isn't just a right to keep and bear arms. If you're going to do that, you also have a duty and a moral obligation to yourself and those around you, your loved ones, to learn how to use your guns for defensive purposes efficiently and effectively. At the moment that you need to use a gun to stop an encounter with a bad guy that's going to cost you or a loved one their life or serious bodily injury, you then have all the legal right to pull your gun out and defend yourself for the life of a loved one. The thing is, are you ready to do that? Do you know how to do that? Do you have it put together in your mind? All right? Are you mentally prepared for this? Too many people that I have heard go out and they'll set up a soda can or a beer bottle or something, and they'll shoot at that thing at, you know, who knows how far away, 10 yards, 5 yards, 50 yards, and it's called plinking, just try to shoot this thing. Well, now, I've never been attacked by an unruly aluminum can or bottle all by itself. Therefore, I don't practice shooting at them. I have been attacked by human beings. So that's what I practice to shoot, because that's what we're looking for. I've been attacked by animals. I have shot animals having been attacked. I shot a couple of dogs that attacked me back in the days when I would go out and you know, bust down doors and look for bad guys. So are you prepared to actually use your gun to defend your life or that of a loved one? Well, if you're not, here's your wake-up call, folks. It's time to get into training. Are you prepared to deal with an icy road if you wake up in the morning and your road is icy? Are you prepared for that? Are you prepared to be able to put the chains on the car, i.e. strap your gun on, and then drive in a very cautious yet defensive manner through this icy roadway? If not, don't get in the car. Get a ride from someone. If you're not prepared to if you're going to own a gun and you're not prepared to use it to defend yourself, don't carry it, and just, you know, carry a cop with you or something. Again, as we've reported on the show, they're under no legal obligation to have to provide provide protection to anybody in the United States. So just keep that in mind. Police are legally under no obligation, hence a court decision in 1981 out of the Supreme Court of the United States, to provide self-protection to anybody. So don't rely on that. You've got to get yourself together and get yourself trained. Go to a local gun store, call them up, something like that, or find an organized school somewhere in the country or within your region and go there and learn how to use the gun. Not just that, but the mental aspect. I trained with a guy one time who was a lifetime NRA guy. He had been a military police officer in the Air Force, and he had never actually committed to his mind until he and I had a discussion about actually using a gun for self-defense and launching rounds into a bad guy, actually shooting another human being if the necessity came about. He never thought about that. He stopped carrying a gun and said, "I'll use my knife." Obviously never thought about what it takes to cut somebody. Anyhow, more when we return from the...
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so picking back up from the last break. Do you exercise your Second Amendment rights, and do you carry a gun for self-defense purposes or keep one in your home? If the answer is yes, then that moves on to the next question. Have you trained and prepared yourself mentally and physically to be able to pull that gun out and shoot another human being? If your answer is no, or if your answer is, I think so, then you need to get it together. If you believe that you'll actually rise to the occasion, the answer is you're fooling yourself. If you believe in any way whatsoever you're going to rise to the occasion and be able to put the bad guy down, you're fooling yourself and you're putting yourself and others around you at risk. The only way that you're going to survive that encounter is if your luck is just a tiny smidgen better than the bad guy's luck that day. And keep in mind, they've got the drop on you. So the chances of that are pretty darn nil. Keep in mind, bad guys that would go around and cause others harm oftentimes do that for a living. If they're going to be a kidnapper or a mugger or a burglar, actually probably not so much a burglar, more of a robber. Okay, robbery is from as person to person. Burglary is a property crime, not necessarily committed in your presence. You come home, your house has been broken into, you've been burglarized, not robbed. You're walking down the street, someone pulls out a gun and tells you to give them your money, your wallet, your purse, ladies, whatever. That's being robbed. A burglary is a property crime. Robbery is a person crime. So let's just keep those terms in order, all right? Let's keep that definition together. So robbers, muggers, certainly rapists, kidnappers, they use and practice the art of overwhelming force on an unsuspecting victim immediately to gain control. Keeping in mind, if you just keep your head out of the grass and look around, look people in the eye, notice what's going on around you, your chances of becoming a victim are much, much, much less. You have to learn and adapt these properties. There's something referred to as the color code of mental awareness. Search for it on the computer. The color code of mental awareness. All right, we'll go through a little bit of that. In condition white, that means essentially it's like vacation. You've got no cares in the world, nothing going on. You never have to worry about anything. That's the condition of a victim. Then you've got condition yellow. Condition yellow means you're aware of what's going on. This is where you should essentially live. It's not paranoia. It's simply being aware. I'm aware that I'm in the studio. I'm aware what room I'm in. I'm aware of where the other doors are. I'm aware of the door chime when someone comes into one of the adjoining rooms or the hallway. I'm aware of that. If I'm driving down the street, I'm aware of the people in the cars around me, where those cars are. When I pull up to a stoplight, I am aware of what lane I'm in and what escape route I have if I need to take one, and I position my car accordingly. If I need to get up on the sidewalk or go across a median, you're not often going to find me in the middle lane, in the middle of five cars in front, five cars behind, cars all around. You're not going to find me in that position very often. I'm just a little bit more aware. All right? So you need to come up with this sort of awareness. If you have this awareness, chances of being a victim are incredibly reduced, except for the most hell-bent and drastically downtrodden criminals that are just looking for something. Oftentimes, it's a drug fix, and they're going to go to any potential victim and get it. However, if they realize you're looking around, you're aware of your surroundings, and they're not going to get the drop on you, they're moving on to easier prey, much like that in the jungle. You don't see the lions going after the big wildebeest. You see them going after the small wildebeest or the weak or the slow. That's exactly the way it works. So don't be that meek little herding wildebeest. That also means keeping yourself in at least somewhat reasonable physical condition. You don't want anybody to look at you and think, man, what a slug. This guy's going to be easy. Or what a wuss, this guy's going to be easy. Or what a meek little woman, she's going to be easy. Right? You don't want people to look at you like that. Carry yourself with some posture, some poise, some frickin' self-respect, and let everybody know, all the potential bad guys know, I am not your victim. Let them know that. Say, I am not going to be anybody's victim today. So once you've got that handled, you don't have to worry too much about it. Next is condition orange. That's where it's a perceived threat. You might hear someone yelling something that could be towards you from across a room or a parking lot. And you might look over and see someone, and they may be looking in your direction, yelling profanities or obscenities or even threats. It might not be to you, but someone near you. You're going to see them, and you're going to be, all right, this is the type of guy I need to be aware of until this situation works itself out. And most of the time it does. Have you ever been in traffic, and all of a sudden you hear a horn honking that obviously the other driver is mad in the form, the way in which they're honking this horn? It gets your attention. Like, is that person honking at me? That's condition orange. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. So with that being said, now what we've got is condition red. Condition red is, say that person is yelling at you, and now they're coming after you. They're coming after you. You've got them zoned in. And you realize this person is a threat. I don't know to what level they're a threat, but they are a threat. Or if the person honking the horn now starts diverting their car towards you as though they're going to ram your car or drive over you if you're on the street, that's now a threat. Now, condition comes into what you're going to do comes in condition black. That is action. This person that was yelling at you from across a parking lot or is coming at you, they present a gun, they present a knife, they present out a hammer or a bat, and they're running at you, and they're ready to do business. That's the time you pull your gun out, you shoot them in the chest. Or with the vehicle, they're driving at you. That's a time to get out of the way, evade it, and fire rounds at this person. Right? I'm giving you proverbial situations here. Now, I don't really want to take callers in what if this sort of thing. What if this? What if that? I got to tell you, if I gave you one scenario, we could literally sit here on the air for the next 30 days and what if it to death and probably still not get everywhere. You will know that little sixth sense. It's called survival. It's when the hairs on the back of your neck raise up, your heart starts pounding, you start getting the cold sweats, and you realize, man, I got to do something. And that is the fight or flight. That's where people are either going to stand their ground and fight or they're going to run. If you can run, that's fine. You don't have to shoot somebody. You don't have to defend if you can get out of there. That's the best response. That's the best plan, the best answer. But if you're not able to do that, you better be prepared to fight. That's also the point where people will either freeze or react. Are you the one who's going to freeze, or are you the one who's going to react? That's going to make the difference. If you stand there and freeze, they're going to pounce, and the bad guy or bad guys are on you. Keep in mind, bad guys are much like rats and cockroaches. They tend to travel in groups. Why? Safety in numbers. Where have you heard safety numbers before? Was that when you and your friends were walking to school in years gone by? You know, walk with these three or four other kids that you know. Walk with your friends at school. Safety in numbers. Don't talk to strangers, don't take candy from strangers, and blah, da, 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 right? All that good stuff. It still holds true today. Hopefully you're teaching your kids that. Because society is much worse than it was 20, 25, 30 years ago. Hell, it's much worse than it was 10 years ago. There wasn't a gang problem in Las Vegas that was, you know, citywide and rampant and whatnot when I graduated high school in the mid-80s. However, 10 years later, it was all over the place. It's certainly back down now. So society changes quite a bit. Are you prepared to handle this? Well, if you're not absolutely online with everything that I'm saying, you need to be prepared for that. So go get training or decide to not carry a gun. Now, I had mentioned at the closing of last segment, I trained with a guy for 2 or 3 days, former Air Force MP, NRA member, master reloader, the guy shot a lot of competitions, big pro gun guy. However, he had his guns hidden in a little secret room, locked up in a safe, past some locks and keys and whatnot. He said the fastest he would be able to access a gun, if he needed one in his house, the fastest was 15 minutes. Now, the average gunfight is 3 to 5 seconds, so he's done. And when we started talking, because we were shooting at humanoid silhouette targets for training for defensive purposes, and, you know, in the Air Force and whatnot, he had done this before. He had talked about it, but he'd never really thought about it. So I gave him this exercise. I said, here's what you need to do. On your way home, do you need to make any stops? Well, yeah, actually, I need to stop at the store and get some stuff for lunch tomorrow. Okay, great. Stop at the store. Here's what I want you to do. Walk in the door, and every single person that you see, have a plan to shoot them if they threaten your life in an instant. From every man, woman, child, little old lady, little old man that's in the store, the checkers, the bag boys, the other customers, the guy behind the meat counter, the lady in bakery, have a plan to shoot that person if they snap right then and there. Now, this is just a mental exercise. So, you know, don't take a gun in there and do this sort of thing. It's a mental exercise. If that person snaps, what's my plan? Okay, if this lady snaps, what's my plan? If this guy walking in the door snaps, what's my plan? If you cannot do that, if you don't have the ability to do that, then you're not prepared to have a gun on you for self-defense. Okay, so keep that in mind. This conversation got to this guy so bad, he actually stopped carrying a gun. He says, I'm going to carry a knife instead. I'll use that. Well, obviously, it's never sunk in your head what it takes to use a knife to cut someone open and defend yourself. Different subject, different time. More when we return.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so we're getting some calls during the break about, wow, this sounds a little bit extreme. You walk into a store and you basically create a plan to shoot everybody that you see if they happen to snap. Well, yeah, you do. And this is a training exercise, folks. This is not something to do when you're actually out there packing. This is something to do beforehand, as though you were packing. All right, if this person's going to snap, that person's going to snap, what do I do? Do I run back around behind this aisle? Do I secure my family around me, or behind me, away from me? My friend that's with me, my spouse, my girlfriend, whatever it is. My buddy, I'm walking in there with my buddy. Let's say Dave Champion and I go into a restaurant, and we're both packing, and somebody comes in there to shoot. Do you think we have already put together a plan? He and I have trained together enough that we'd be able to work this thing out just like that, just immediately. We'd be able to work this out. We don't sit with our backs to the door. We don't necessarily sit back in the corner, but we have a good view of what's going on. I've got his back. He's got mine. If something goes down in a restaurant or a place where Dave Champ and I happen to be hanging out, do you think we're going to be able to take care of it? Yes, because we have both trained individually and we trained a little bit together. We understand the principles and tactics. Here's what it takes, folks. To prevail in a gunfight, it takes three things. It takes gun handling, it takes marksmanship, and it takes tactics. Let me explain these three things to you. Gun handling is keeping your gun running, loading it, keeping it running. If it gets a malfunction, you got to know how to clear it reflexively in the middle of an armed encounter while you're in a gunfight. Can you clear this failure to feed? Can you clear this failure to eject? Can you clear this failure to fire? If you shoot to where your gun is empty, can you reload with this speed load? Can you speed load this gun in there in this emergency situation and re-engage? Can you do this? Well, that's gun handling. Marksmanship is hitting your target. That's aligning your sights, pressing the trigger, and actually hitting your intended victim. I should say, the intended suspect who's decided he's going to be your victim because he was dumb enough to bring the fight to you. So, are you going to be able to hit them? That's marksmanship. Now, those things are easily worked out on a range. The third and final thing is tactics. Now, this is how I've liked to describe this to literally hundreds, if not thousands, of students that have come across any class I've ever taught as a professional firearms and tactics instructor. This is what I say to them. Gun handling, keeping your gun running, regardless of your place on planet Earth, time of day, day of year, are you going to clear malfunctions and keep your gun running, manipulate this gun the same way every time? Well, the answer is yes. Marksmanship, same conditions. Any place on planet Earth, day of the week, it doesn't really matter. Are you going to align your sights and use your trigger the same way at all times? Well, the answer to that is yes. So those are the two constants. The third is tactics. Tactics, in my definition, is your ability to not get shot in a gunfight, all right? Or not get cut if somebody brings a knife to you, is to not get injured and be able to put rounds where they need to go. Sometimes in tactics, your goal is to just not be engaged. You may tactically take up a position of cover, which is bulletproof. So if you go into a bank at 2 o'clock on a Thursday in February and three bad guys come in there and you've got a gun, they've got guns, how are your tactics going to be? Let's say next year, same Thursday, same 2 o'clock, February, a year later, three new guys come in there, all armed, you've got your gun. Are you going to do exactly the same thing as before, or could your tactics change? Well, your tactics are going to change. In condition black, your tactics will change. That's engagement. That's where you rely on your training. If you think you're going to rise to that occasion, you're sorely mistaken. You're going to be about half as good on the street as your best day on the training range. So if you're absolutely peaked on the training range, you're going to be half that good in an armed encounter on the street. Now, armed, that means you armed with your gun. The bad guy could have a gun, could have a knife, a baseball bat, a crowbar, a vehicle. They might be wielding any sort of object that could cause you death or serious bodily injury. That's the key. And you have to be imminently afraid of death or serious bodily injury. It is coming to you. Then you can defend yourself. So this whole thing where, you know, like in Florida, when they really kind of opened up the law to be able to engage, there was anti-gun groups out there such as, you know, don't rile up a local citizen because it could be like the Old West. They could pull out their gun and shoot you. What a load of crap. Absolute, total load of crap. So, all right. Let's say that you're in your home and a bad guy busts in at home. What are you going to do then? Are you prepared to actually grab your handgun or your shotgun or your rifle, whatever you've got, and engage them? From wee hours of the night, sleepy eyes, oh, groggy, oh, my God, something just happened. Bad guys are breaking in. They're going into my kid's room. I can hear them screaming. What do I do? What do I do? Do I know how to clear my house or apartment? Do you know how to clear your house or apartment? Here's what you do. You get what's called your finger gun. You just make the little gun sign in your hand, or you play as though you're holding a long gun, and you actually go through and you clear your house. Now, you have to learn how to do that, slicing the pie one step at a time, dynamic entry, movement, how to open a door, doors, T's, and intersections, whether you're going to cross pattern, button hook, whatever. You have to learn those things, and that's at an organized range. You're not going to learn that off of this radio show, off of listening to it, and you're not going to learn it on the street. So, more when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carr.
Okay, I learned this lesson long ago from a guy that I trained in firearms. He trained me in edge weapons, knives. I mean, this guy was essentially kind of I referred to him as the Yokozuna of edged weapons. Probably one of the most efficient guys currently on planet Earth with a knife. I mean, this guy's unreal. Or I should say any edged weapon. Any contact thing that can cut, gouge, poke. This guy is the dude. And I got to tell you, he's incredible. I've never seen anybody move so fast in my life. He did a demonstration with another guy that I know who happens to be a master gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps who had a a fake gun, a training gun. It was called a red gun. It's just an injection-molded piece of plastic in a holster. And the master guns was to pull his gun up and put his finger on the trigger and say press while the guy who was the knife guy, Mr. Yokozuna of the blade, had a folding knife behind his back, was to open the knife, drag the dull edge across the throat of Master Guns, and then fold the knife back behind him before Master Guns could bring up his gun and say press. They were at a distance of about 3 yards. All right? No, I guess about 2 yards. A little over 6 feet. Guess who won? The guy with the knife. And it was an even go signal. Right? He was that fast. Unbelievably fast. Agile, accurate. This guy knew what he was doing. I call him Yokozuna. Yokozuna is a term that is it's for Japanese sumo wrestlers. Somebody that wins the championship X number of times achieves the rank of Yokozuna. So just so you understand where that term comes from. So this guy was excellent with a knife. I was excellent with the gun. We kind of traded services. I was teaching him how to shoot. He was taking a bunch of classes where I worked and whatnot. And we would actually do some discussions and training with a blade. And he told me something that worked perfectly for self-defense. He said, you can't think about what you're doing while you're doing it, and you can't harp on it when you're done. If someone forces you to have to defend yourself with a gun, a bat, a knife, a shovel, whatever, it was entirely their decision. So you're doing what you need to do to survive and get through this. When you're done, you don't go back and Monday morning quarterback this thing. That's not your job. Right? So with that being said, that's problem one. Problem one is the bad guy in front of you right now that's putting you to the test. Victim or victor. That's problem one. Right? Problem two comes very quickly after that, and that's when law enforcement arrives. How do you handle yourself with that? Followed down the line from that, problem three, which would be any sort of civil liability that you may have. So let's talk about those a little bit. Problem one is a bad guy. That's what we've been talking about this show so far. Problem two is when the police show up. How do you handle yourself? Well, I tell you, you handle yourself exactly the way you would want someone to handle themselves if you were a cop showing up. You show up and there's a bad guy, maybe a couple of them, on the ground in a parking lot, in a mall, whatever, that have been shot, and you're there, and you've got a gun, and the gun is on them. When they show up, it's an awful good idea not to have that gun in your hand so they don't show up and start shooting. I was a cop. You have no idea what's going on. Now, you roll up, there's chaos, there's mayhem, and there's somebody with a gun. There's a couple other guys on the ground. You don't know who the good guys are, who the bad guys. So you know what you're going to do? You're going to do what I did. And that is you're going to take everybody into custody. You're going to disarm everybody. You're going to put everybody in cuffs, and then you're going to sort it out. So expect that to happen. Expect guns to be pointed at you, and you can say, look, I'm the good guy. They were attacking me. You know what? Right then and there is not the time nor the place to plead your case. You shouldn't only get to look at him, start waving your gun and talking with your hands. Look, I'm the good. You're going to get shot. So don't do that. If they're coming, put the gun in the holster, put your hands above your head, and just listen away and follow what they say. If they want you on your knees, if they want you proned out, do it. If you have the gun in your hand, they tell you to put it on the ground. Keep your non-shooting hand up in the air. And I'm doing this as I'm telling you this on the radio. I've actually got my left hand in the air. Put that hand up in the air as you keep your finger straight, lie the gun down on the ground, muzzle away from any law enforcement. Then slowly rise up, put your other arm in the air. Now I'm sitting in front of a microphone with both my hands in the air. And you step back away from the gun as they tell you. All right? Listen to them. You'll get your story sorted out. Should you give them a statement? Well, that depends on you. A very short, simple, easy statement, something along the lines of, I was at the ATM machine withdrawing cash, and this fella over here lying on the ground came up to me with a gun, demanded my money, and put the gun in my face. I pushed his arm away as I grabbed my gun. I came up, and I fired into his chest. And when you say I fired 2 rounds, 4 rounds, 8 rounds, you're not don't count when you're on the range. Don't count how many rounds you fired before you reload your gun. All right, don't do it. You're not going to do that on the street. Trust me. You're not going to be counting rounds on the street. You have cops that have been in half a dozen shootings that say, yeah, I fired 3 rounds, when in fact there's 9 shell casings on the ground. So don't tell them how many rounds. Just, this guy came up, put a gun in my face, told me to give me the money or he's going to kill me. I threw my hand up in the air, blocking his gun as I pulled my gun, and I shot him in the chest. Or I shot him. That's all you need. If it goes beyond that, then you know what? You need to make sure you talk to them. The thing is, you want to try to go home that night. Some law enforcement agencies have a policy. If anybody's involved in a shooting, they're going to go to jail. They're going to have their gun taken away for safekeeping or going into some sort of lab for ballistics tests and whatnot. They're going to get fingerprinted. They're going to get booked. And then they're going to get released eventually. Some departments just, that's what's going to happen. You can't get around it. But others, you can. You might go home that night. There was a case in Las Vegas about 7 years ago where there was a guy who was a career scumbag. The guy had never done anything good in his life. He stole money. He was a druggie. He was an alcoholic. And he was preying on his poor elderly mother constantly. One day he went over to her house and demanded that she give him money and some of her prescription drugs. Well, she had had it. And she said, no, you're not getting anything out of me anymore. He started to beat his mother's backside. He started to beat his elderly mother. She was able to get her gun and shoot her son. He died. Of course, she called the cops, and that's the best thing to do. You want to be the one to call the cops, if at all possible. When the cops showed up, they sorted everything out. She did not go to jail. They took him away, and they actually gave her what's called the victim's information card. If you're the victim of any kind of crime, police in Las Vegas carry around this victim information card, and it has phone numbers associated with different organizations that you can call for assistance. So even though she shot him, in fact, she was the victim. She was the victim of the crime. She only responded, and her own son died. And, you know, she did the right thing, quite honestly. This guy was a career scumbag, spent a lot of time in jail, had a bunch of scumbag friends that would come over. They would abuse their privileges of being able to be in his mother's house. And, you know, he'd steal money and prescription drugs, all kinds of stuff from her. And then when she finally had had enough, he decided, you know, you haven't had near enough because I'm gonna give more to you. And she stopped him. So that's what I'm talking about. Problem three is any potential civil liabilities that you may have. Now, keep in mind, if you're shooting at a bad guy and you miss, you legally are responsible. You own every round ever fired out of any gun you ever shoot. Even out on the shooting range, you own that thing until it comes to a complete rest. So you go to some outdoor range and you're shooting, and that bullet ricochets and goes into somebody, guess what? That's your responsibility. Every round you fire. Now, most ranges are safe enough that you pretty much eliminate any risk there involved. But if you shoot at somebody and that round goes careening off, you're just not good. You're not on your sights. Your trigger control is gone, whatever it may be. And you miss your intended target. What or whom is that bullet likely to impact? Because, folks, you cannot get any round back. You cannot change the trajectory of a round on your own. You own it. So make sure that when you fire, you hit. Now, that brings us to something else. Law enforcement has a traditionally horrible hit rate. And I am not saying anything bad about any individual officers. But as a general rule, cops don't shoot that much unless they take it upon themselves with their own time and their own money to go train. Because departments generally do not give their officers enough training or enough training opportunity. Now, a lot of cops will take their own time. They're already going to go out and work as a cop for 40 or 50 hours a week. Then they've got to take their pay, which is usually reasonable, but not excessive, and sometimes not good at all. And they're supposed to take some of their own damn money and go out and train and buy rounds, especially in this day and age, where ammunition is expensive, and they're going to go train on their own. Well, you know, it's okay to tune up on your own if you know how to do it. But if you're going to let somebody train on their own and they really don't know what to do, oftentimes you're not going to be doing very good stuff. So it's not a fault of the police officers. It's just the way that the environment is. When I was with Las Vegas Metro, we had to qualify quarterly. Every 3 months, we had to go out and shoot ammo. Every month, they would give you a box of ammunition, training ammunition, to go out there and shoot. Quarterly, when you trained, they'd have you shoot the ammunition you were issued for defense, usually some sort of hollow point, either a you had silver tip hollow points for a while by Winchester. Then we went to the Federal Hydra Shock after a while. You shot your duty ammo, and then they would issue you new duty ammo. So it was actually pretty good considering it was a large metropolitan police department. Qualifying quarterly, four times a year, you had to go out there and qualify. The thing is, the guys at the range who trained at the time were horrible. They were not good at all. We had, when I was in the police academy, we had these three guys that come up, these old codgers. I swear, I think the youngest guy was mid-60s, 66, 67, 68. These guys come down. You got the range masters, two instructors. They were civilian employees. And one of the guys opens his statement with something along the lines of, between the three of us, we have over 120 years combined police and military firearms training. Now, what did I hear at that time? I had just graduated top of my class at Gunsight Academy in Arizona, Gunsight Range. I had finished top of my class, I was 25 years old. And what did I hear when this guy told me that 120 years combined police and military training was, we are so old and antiquated in our ways. We stopped learning and listening decades ago. We're destined to not only not be able to teach you efficiently, if you're good, we'll probably make you worse. That was the message I received, and in fact, that's the way it went. There's two modern stances out there that people tend to use. Actually, I guess three, but the main one are isosceles and Weaver, and then there's this Chapman stance that some people use as well. Here was their lecture on grip and stance. Well, there's two popular ways. Stand face on with your target, grab your gun, pull it out of the holster, just swing it on up to the target, get on your sights and press. The other one is drop your, they called it the strong side foot back, have your weak side foot forward, and you kind of bend your weak side elbow a little bit when you shoot. Try either one, see how it works for you. That was their entire lecture on grip and stance, which, if you don't already know, is pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. If I were to go through a grip and stance with you just on the Weaver stance, which is what I shoot, I would take a good 5 or 6 minutes just on how to stand in that. If I were to go into isosceles, there's a few minutes on that. If I were to go into Chapman, there's a few minutes on that. So now we're talking 15 minutes to give you. The thing is, you don't want to give so many options. Try this. Let's get working. Let's get you a platform. So anyhow, police generally get 17 to 20% hit ratio. Now, keeping in mind a nick on the arm is considered a hit. When I talk about hitting, that is a thoracic shot into your thorax, into the center of the chest. Not the center of mass. Center of mass would be from your groin to your throat. The center of that is just above your belly button. That's not where you want to be. If you can see rib cage, where the rib cage should be, you're going to fire into that. That's the thorax. You've got the heart, the lungs, major blood vessels involved in there. It's the boiler room, the pumping station to shoot at. You don't want to shoot somebody in the leg, shoot them in the arm. I love the whole thing. Well, couldn't you shoot the gun out of their hand? You got to be kidding me. It's hard enough to shoot somebody in the chest when they're moving and pissed off and trying to kill you, let alone try to shoot a gun out of a hand. An accuracy shot under this threat and the stress of someone trying to kill you, it's not going to happen, guys. If you shoot the gun out of somebody's hand, it just happened to work out that way. It wasn't an intent. It just doesn't work that way. And for people to say that just comes from absolute pure, pure ignorance. So anyhow, the cops' actual good hit percentages, we're talking chest shots or headshots if they go for it in a failure situation, are more like 5 to 6%. That means about 19 rounds are going downrange somewhere else to one good hit. All right? Even if you take, say, the high end, 20% hit ratio, 4 rounds are missing the target completely when one hits. Why is that? Poor training. All right? It's poor training. And you can blame that on the administration of the police department that dictates the training. They hire the trainers. And the state-of-the-art trainers are not the ones who are at the police departments, generally speaking. They're usually at private organizations, such as Thunder Ranch, Gunsight, some of the folks out at Frontside. Some of these are the guys, the ladies and women, the gentlemen that are top of their game. They're not working in some cushy office in a police range teaching cops how to shoot. Generally, you get a pretty lower end deal with that. And you have cops that were trained by cops that were trained by cops that were trained by cops that have never gotten out and actually done some more tactical niche training. SWAT folks generally do better. However, most SWAT teams, especially if they're full-time, will do training every single day. A couple hours, 2 or 3 hours worth of training each shift. Then they go out and they serve high-end warrants or serve call-outs. Okay, so average, everyday officers don't get it. You need to be trained higher to that. You need to be able to be trained higher than 1 out of 5 shots hit the bad guy, or 1 out of 20 hit them where they need to go. Because cops have protection when it comes to the kind of the civil, criminal and civil ramifications, because they're on the job. You don't. I don't. That means you've got to be better. Every round has to hit where they're going to hit. All right? So there's your civil liability for you. So make the right decisions in any potentially lethal encounter. Absolutely do everything the police say slowly and methodically and without reservation and without argument when they arrive. And make sure that your hits are where they belong and you're justified in it for problem 3. All right? We've got more coming up in the final segment of the show. Again, you can reach me, Bill, at 2aradio.com. Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Welcome back, folks. So the reason that 2A Radio exists, and I'm here chewing on this microphone and spitting the good word to you folks every Monday through Friday in the morning, is to let you know that the Second Amendment and D.C. versus Heller guarantees you the right to use a gun for self-protection, to own and possess a gun for self-protection, and use it under the right circumstances to save your life or that of a loved one under imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. That's the key. Imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. Someone's essentially begun their attack, and you respond. All right? That's when you can get away with it. That's when you're justified, I should say. So, not always are we going to be able to carry a gun. You know what? I always carry my knife. As a matter of fact, I refer to my folding pocket knife as my American Express card because I never leave home without it. Now, not only do I carry the knife, I know how to use it if I don't have a gun. Or maybe my gun goes down. I'm relegated to a knife. There's a lot of places where I can go and carry my knife that, for some reason or other, I can't carry my gun. I tell you one place that absolutely inflames me is when you've got private businesses that say, don't carry a gun in here. That enrages me because that's a constitutional right that you are guaranteed. So my question is, what other constitutional rights are you going to take away from me when I enter your establishment, your place of business? Am I allowed to have free speech? Are you allowed to unreasonably seize me and hold me or dish out some sort of unreasonable punishment to me if you don't like who I am or what I do? Do I give up other constitutional rights when I walk into your place of business? No. But you expect me to give up my Second Amendment right. I had this situation. I walked into my power company to pay my bill. This is probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And it said, no weapons allowed. Well, that means I can't go in there because I consider myself the weapon. The gun, the knife, the bat, whatever it is a tool. All right. So don't be afraid of the gun. Don't be afraid of the knife. Be concerned about the person. Like bad guys. Too many anti-gunners. Oh, you know, these guns are evil. No, the people that are operating the guns are evil. My guns are not evil. However, if you put them in the hands of an evil person, they will do evil things with them. Same thing with the vehicle. You can drive up on the sidewalk and plow a bunch of innocent people down with a car. Was the car evil? No. The scumbag driving it was evil. So I wrote a letter to the CEO, the president of the company, for the co-op, as it were, of my power company. And I asked for an explanation. And then I asked for how can we go about as members of this co-op for this power company to redress this particular rule and see if we can get it talked about and potentially changed. You know what I got back? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I actually haven't walked into my power company since then. I pay my bill online, which is just as good. It's more convenient for me, and I'm not going to have my power company disarm me. Quite honestly, folks, they can kiss my ass. I hope you learned a couple things today about yourselves. I hope you're able to listen to my voice and dig down just a little bit and decide, am I truly ready to exercise my Second Amendment right in defense of myself or my loved ones if need be? If not, I encourage you to take this weekend and get some training. I appreciate you spending your day with me, spending your week with me. Bill at 2A Radio, thanks again.